Lesson 8, hardening your house. The concept of soft and hard targets is pretty straightforward, but if you aren't familiar with it, think of a turtle. If you were going to attack a turtle, would you attack the hard top shell or the soft underbelly? Now obviously you'd pick the soft target over the hard target. And the same logic applies to selecting an individual house to burglarize in a neighborhood. And this is the case whether it's today or tomorrow, or whether it's 7 weeks into an urban survival situation. In any case, criminals are going to, they're going to evaluate which house to attack. And so you want to make yours as unappealing as possible. And here's an example. If you're a burglar on Christmas Eve and you see one house with security lighting and a German Shepherd in the front yard, and another with a Christmas tree and 20 presents in a picture window with a sign on the door that says, "Grandma, the back door is unlocked. We'll be home from service around 8. The soft, easy target is obviously the empty house with the unlocked door, lots of visible presents, and the welcome message. I need to start off right away by saying that you can easily spend hundreds of thousands of dollars hardening your house with upgraded doors, windows, walls, and roofs. But $100,000 solutions are not going to help most people taking this course. If you want that kind of help, let me know. It's definitely something I can help you with. But most people who have that kind of money to throw at urban survival would be better off moving to a rural or small town location full time. What we're going to do is focus on affordable strategies and techniques that can help protect your family and your belongings now, and inexpensive ways to beef things up quickly if you need to in a survival situation. We're also going to get into some pretty heavy topics and cover some more extreme strategies at the end of this chapter. It's important to accept the fact that most houses in the U.S. will always be vulnerable if someone is determined to get in or get you out. Many European homes are built of concrete blocks or large stone. A lot of houses in Central and South America and in the Middle East have bars on the windows, gates, attack dogs, all metal doors with 5-point locks instead of 1-point locks, and they're made of stone or other material, and even the walls around them are topped with broken glass or razor wire. They're very defensible houses, nothing like the U.S. And it's rare that a house in the U.S. can withstand a direct impact from a pickup, let alone a car. In fact, it's also rare to find a house in the U.S. that can withstand even one Molotov cocktail or an ordinary wildfire, as we see almost every summer on the news. This is why it's important to try to bring as little trouble in your house as possible, both now and in a disaster situation. Maintain good operational security, don't escalate conflicts, and don't get involved in fights you don't have to. In an urban survival situation, it's important to blend in and stay as invisible as possible. We're also going to cover things that you can do that won't be very noticeable to your neighbors. Ideally, we want to make security changes that will deter potential burglars and looters, stop them if they attempt to force their way into your house, but really, you want to stay under the radar so you don't get asked questions about paranoia or make your house look like a target. We just want to make smart changes that will give us additional security without taking too much time or money. Let's start right now by looking at how burglars break into houses. Amazingly, 32% enter through an unlocked door or window. According to the FBI's 13,360 reporting agencies, this happened well over 600,000 times in the U.S. in 2007. That was in a good economy with low unemployment. In another career, I had to get into vacant and abandoned houses to inspect them. Many of the owners were from out of town, and waiting for a key to arrive in the mail meant my projects got delayed by several days. As a result, I learned how to get into houses without keys. And I can tell you from personal experience, between sliding doors, unlocked windows, and unlocked doors, it was very rare that I wasn't able to get into a house within a couple of minutes and without damaging anything. That wasn't with picking locks. It wasn't with doing anything fancy. It was just me getting into the house. After unlocked doors and windows, 26% of burglaries are by forced impact. 24% are by prying or jimmying. And less than 7% use a pass key or a lock pick, including the famous lock bumping. The where is as interesting as the how. 34% of burglars enter through the front door, 23% through a first floor window, and 22% through a back door. Only 2% entered on the second floor. And alarms? Well, 41% of alarmed homes where burglaries were attempted had their systems turned off. You probably found out that your alarm battery dies quite quickly when the electricity goes out. So unless you have it hooked up to a car battery that gets recharged regularly, don't depend on it in a lights out situation. Whether you have an alarm or not, it's a good idea to get a lawn sign and some stickers from a local alarm company. In interviews with burglars, most will avoid houses with alarm signs in favor of a softer target. Although there aren't statistics on the 41% of alarmed houses that had their alarms turned off, I would put money on the fact that they didn't have an obvious visible sign advertising the fact that they had an alarm in the first place. So, to harden your house as efficiently as possible, let's go where the numbers tell us to go and take a look at front doors. Most residential exterior doors in the U.S. could be described as follows. Number one, they open inwards. And this is so they can't be blocked and so that you can install a screen door. Number two, the hinges are screwed into the door frame. And number three, they have a handle and a deadbolt that go into the door frame. Saying that a chain is only as strong as its weakest link applies here. If a burglar kicks a door and the door is flimsy, then the door itself will break. If it is solid and open inward, the force will be transferred to the door hinges and the deadbolt. More specifically, it will be transferred to the screws and whatever the screws are solidly attached to. Of the two sides of the door, the deadbolt side is normally the weakest, since it is doing alone what the two hinges are doing as a team. When you think about how a deadbolt works, it's basically securing your door to your door frame, not the stud. And the door frame is normally only a 3/4 inch thick piece of relatively soft wood. In fact, it's not much different than the boards that get broken in martial arts demonstrations. Since doors normally close flush on the inside of the frame, that means that there isn't very much depth to that 3/4 piece of wood to support your deadbolt, and a good kick is all it takes to get through most doors. Now here are the factors that we can change to make exterior doors more resistant to forcible entry. Number one, the door itself. If you're replacing your door, go for a solid wood door, fiberglass or aluminum, depending on what's recommended for your location and the direction the door is facing in relation to the sun. Check with contractors to see if there are any businesses in your area that stock used doors. It's possible to get a great-looking, solid, slow-growth wood door that's 50 years old for less than a flimsy new door. Windows indoors are great for light and seeing out, but they're also a weak spot on a door and allow a burglar to reach in and unlock or open the door. If you currently have windows on your door, keep reading for how to make them more secure. Next is windows by the doors. If you have a beautiful entryway with windows on one or more sides of your door, look into putting security film on them at a minimum. I'll show you videos on security film on the resource page for this chapter. If you have creative ways to replace the glass with wood that won't detract from the house, please share them with your fellow students on the resource page. Next, the deadbolt. Look for an ANSI level 1 lock. You can buy levels 1, 2, and 3, and level 1 is the highest. It should feel nice and solid in your hand, kind of like it could take a few strikes from a sledgehammer. Next is the door frame. When you buy a pre-hung door, it's pre-hung on a decorative frame, usually wood that gets nailed to the header. If you've ever seen a house being built, you know that doors get framed out way before the doors are actually installed. This framing that creates the door openings is called a header, and headers are built from 2x4s or 2x6 studs. They're solid, and it's what you want to attach your strike plate and your hinges to. If you're installing a new door, consider getting a door that is pre-hung on a metal frame. Next is a strike plate. The strike plate is what your deadbolt goes through or into on the door frame. The bigger the strike plate and the more holes it has for screws to secure it to your studs, the more secure your door will be. Use a flashlight to see how long of a screw you would need to screw the strike plate through the decorative frame and into a stud. In most cases, a 3-inch screw will go through the frame, through a small dead space, and into the stud, or the header. Next, hinges. You should use 3-inch screws with hinges as well to secure them to the through the decorative frame and into the actual stud or header. Next is door swing. If you're installing a new door, consider installing it so that it swings outward. It will negate much of the advantage that an intruder has during a forcible entry attempt. Any attempts to kick, ram, or push the door open will be defeated by the entire door frame, in addition to the hinges and deadbolt. There is a risk in doing this. If you're in blizzard country and get deep snow against your door, you won't be able to open it to get out. If you're in flood country and water rises quickly, you may not be able to open the door until the water level is the same side in and out. And if you ever need help from the fire department or EMS and they can't unlock the door, and you can't unlock the door, they'll have to do quite a bit of damage to get in. But since you're trying to make your house difficult for determined people to get into, it's a trade-off you may be willing to live with. If you do this, make sure and use hinges that can't be tapped out. So this week, I want you to go through your house, and if you have more than one exterior door, remove the strike plate screw and a hinge screw from each door, and if they aren't 3 inches long, replace them with a 3-inch screw. Next is Katie bars, and I really like the story of a Katie bar. King James I of Scotland was being overrun, and the queen and one of his maidservants, named Catherine, was with him in his chambers. The intruders were in the castle and fast approaching the king's chambers. Out of devotion to her king, Catherine put her arm where the missing lock bar was supposed to go across the door so it wouldn't open. The intruders came. The intruders started pounding on the door. And, amazingly enough, she kept her arm in place until the intruders broke her arm, entered the room, and killed the king. So it's got a sad ending. But that's why it's called a Katie bar. It's named after Catherine. And we're going to use materials that are much harder than a forearm. So I'm going to tell you a pretty solution to this on the resource page, but you can have the materials on hand to make an improvised Katie bar in under 5 minutes for $20 to $30 per door. Simply buy two S or U-shaped brackets that'll hold a 2x4, some 3 to 3.5 inch screws, and a board or metal pipe long enough to span the width of your door, plus the brackets. You don't need to do anything with the brackets now. You don't need to install them. You don't need to do anything. Just keep them on hand, and if the need arises, you can pull them out, screw them into your studs on both sides of your door in 5 minutes, and drop your Katie bar into place. I want to do a quick aside on power tools with no electricity. Make sure you have a plan for how you will screw and drill if you don't have any power. Many popular tool batteries become almost worthless after a few short years of use. Other than manually drilling and screwing, you can develop a habit of always keeping your batteries charged, or you can look for 12 or 24 volt drill combo sets with dead batteries. I know it sounds funny, but you can take the dead battery apart and rig it so you can run a wire from the old base to one or two 12 volt car or motorcycle batteries. It's heavy, and it's bulky, but you can charge car and motorcycle batteries with a solar charger, and you won't have to worry about it running dead as quick as batteries that come with your drill. You can also use an 18-volt drill with 3 6-volt motorcycle batteries. As a note, if you find the wire running from the battery to the drill is getting hot, it means you need to use a larger wire. Next, security lighting. This is a simple one. Install security lighting, specifically with motion detectors covering the main approaches to your house. We have lights with two settings. They turn on at a dim setting when it gets dark out, and they get bright anytime the motion detector detects movement. I haven't found any reasonably priced solar security lights that are as bright as 120 volt ones, so you have to make a judgment call on which features are most important to you. Next are windows. I'm always somewhat amused at houses that have beefed up front doors, but a big picture window 10 feet away that I could easily break and walk through. Windows are an obvious vulnerability in most houses, but I certainly don't want to get rid of mine, and I doubt you do either. Again, we're looking for solutions that don't make your house stand out, will increase your security now, and increase your security in the event of a disaster. And in addition, we want your house to be enjoyable to live in. It's kind of nice to look outside. So, plywood is a great field expedient option for protecting your windows in a hurricane or during a breakdown in civil order, but it's obviously a poor choice during normal times. If you use plywood during a survival or disaster situation, it will protect your windows, but it will do so at the cost of reduced visibility. Even so, I would suggest having a few extra panels on hand. Why? Well, because every other option takes time to research, decide on, and install. Every other option takes significantly more money than plywood as well. In short, I know that you can go out in the next 7 days and buy a few sheets of plywood, but it may take weeks or months to follow through on any of the other options. Tempered glass. While 4 times stronger than ordinary windows, tempered or safety glass will still break and allow entry into a house. They just don't shatter. This is a great choice for sliding glass windows. In fact, it's required by law so that people don't get hurt walking through them, but not a great choice for security. Next is security film. And security film is basically a film like window tinting that's installed on the inside of the window so attacks will break the window, but the film will hold the glass together and keep it from entering your house. This film should be professionally installed and cost between $5 and $10 per square foot. It'll stop bricks, branches, rocks, and bats. And if you're willing to pay more, you can even get film that will stop bullets. I've got some great videos on the resource page that'll show you just how well security film can protect your windows. Next is storm windows. Storm windows or hurricane windows are laminated at the factory and are made to withstand flying debris going as fast as 100 miles an hour. They're normally tempered and essentially are made by layering glass and high-density plastic sheets. Again, the glass still breaks when it's impacted, but it's held together, and there will not be a hole that the intruder can use to enter or reach in. See the video at the end for details on this. Next is Lexan. I love Lexan. It's a polycarbonate, which means it's a long chain of carbon, and it's bullet-resistant or bulletproof, depending on the thickness. It's used for Nalgene hiking bottles and for windows along golf courses. I've had Nalgene bottles made out of Lexan drop 150 feet off of a cliff and hit rock about halfway full of water, so with a pound in them, and bounce probably 20 feet in the air but not break. It's just great, great stuff. It does scratch more than glass, but it's extremely impact resistant. Lexan has an lower R value, so it doesn't insulate as well, and it doesn't insulate against sound as well. If you go this route, look for Lexan that is warranted against discoloration, but be aware that Lexan is protected from discoloration by a UV coating, which is good if you're trying to protect furniture, but bad if you're heating your house with passive solar. Next is storm shutters. These can be accordion shutters, swinging shutters, or rolling shutters. This is a much more expensive option than the previous ones, and more visible, but one that you want to be aware of, particularly the rolling shutters. Popular in Europe for decades, they're controlled from the inside and allow you to have full light, no light, or partial light in a room. They're built out of aluminum and will protect your windows, increase the R value of your window openings, and they're very strong. Next is walls. A good friend of mine had what can only be described as a heart-wrenching experience a few years ago that I want to briefly share with you. He was working on a house in a rough part of San Antonio where the houses are small and close together, when he heard screams outside. He went out to see smoke pouring out of the house next door. Worse, he saw a mom and her young daughter trapped inside, reaching through burglar bars, trying to get out. He ran over, and he didn't speak enough Spanish to really talk to him, but he knew he needed to help him. So he tried pulling and prying and everything.